Welcome back to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast. I'm Dr. Michaela Benson, a reader in sociology at Goldsmiths, University of London, and the research lead for a UK and a Changing Europe funded project that's all about what Brexit means for British citizens living in the EU27. Today I'm joined by Molly and Naomi, who are members of Young European Voices, which is a group of young people, of UK citizens living in the EU and EU nationals living in the UK, young people who are trying to get their voices heard about Brexit. But before we get into what Young European Voices have been doing, I wondered if you could both introduce yourself a little bit, talk about where you live, how old you are, those types of things. So perhaps Molly, we'll start with you.
I live here with my family at the moment in the Valencia region. We're a bit like nomads, so European nomads. I was born in Chertsey, Surrey, and 25 years old. But I was sort of spent half my life in the UK and half my life, to cut it short, living in various countries throughout the EU. But it's my dad's job, so he's an IT contractor, so he moved every year or 2 years. I did that, and then I also lived in Australia as well. And I used to work in the hospitality industry, and then I did a huge move and after Brexit decided to do campaigning.
Naomi, how about you?
So I'm Naomi. I am 24 years old. I grew up and was born in Munich, Germany, and that's where I moved back to after studying politics and international relations at Bath University in the UK. I spent, 19 years in Germany, did 4 years in the UK for my degree, and then since 2018 I've been back in Munich.
Why did you move back after your degree?
Brexit was a key factor. I'm a third culture kid. Both of my parents are English, but growing up in and spent all my life in Germany. And it was kind of this idea that I was going home. Didn't believe I was going to have a culture shock when I got to the UK. I was like, nah, I'm not going to have that at all. And then actually had a massive culture shock and realised it isn't 100% home. And I felt much happier in Germany. And the opportunity to come back and get German citizenship was another sort of catalyst to why I made the decision to move back.
So are you working in Germany at the moment?
Yeah. So I'm currently working in marketing.
I suppose then, really, both of your experiences of having grown up in and around, well, in your case, Naomi, in Germany, and in your case, Molly, all over Europe, kind of gave you quite a particular understanding of Europeanness. Is it fair to say that?
I think 100%, because that third culture kid sort of example of the situations that we're both living, it's like you never quite 100% fit in into, yeah, for me, into a German culture or an English culture, because there's so many different cultural references or things that you do that reflect the other culture.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's also like, I don't know if you ever felt like this moment, but I didn't feel British when I was living in the UK. I never really did. I kind of thought, even though I was born there and I spent a lot of time there, I always felt, I felt outcasted a lot of the time. I grew up in Europe, however, I feel European, but then I feel like an international citizen of the world. You can't really tell people where you're from. It's sort of like this mixture, but you're proud of it.
It's really interesting. I did an interview nearly a year ago now with a young woman who'd been educated at one of the European Union schools, one of the European schools in Brussels, and she described going to Britain to go to university as the first time that she'd moved and lived in the UK that she could remember, in exactly the same terms of this kind of thinking that she'd be okay when she arrived, and then realizing that she was missing lots of cultural references, lots of even kind of historic references that she didn't have a grasp on. So realizing in that moment that she probably was more European than she was British.
It's one of those things where the term European sort of incorporates both cultures then, because you're saying you're neither one or the other, you're this mixture. And I think that's what's quite nice about it.
So you feel more of an association with the idea of being European, I suppose.
Yeah, I sort of walk the line between both. It's not a war or anything or a camp between, but like between the German side of things that I do and the British sort of side, and I walk between both of them. So I'm neither one or the other. And I think that European descriptor makes it easier to define. So many times people ask you, but where do you come from? And it's like, do you want the long answer or the short answer?
It's really interesting, though, to hear you describe that idea of being European as kind of being this easier way of narrating who you are, I think, than being caught, not in a challenging way, between different nationalities, but trying to bring it together in a way that makes sense to you, I suppose. I mean, I suppose an interesting question is, do you think that you would have referred to yourself as European before Brexit?
I actually don't think I would have done. I think that made the need to define yourself more. And I think actually it made me question, it was because before Brexit, I didn't have dual nationality. I only had British. And it was like, can I actually call myself European now? Like that was all the sort of the stuff that was going through my head. And it was a real sort of identity crisis that I had to sort of process myself, because it was just like, what am I? How do I define myself? And it made me question that, because the election result didn't go the way I'd hoped, and a lot of my family couldn't vote in it. We had no choice in sort of giving our opinion. It still made me go, have I lost the right to this word European in one vote? Do you know what I mean?
Perhaps the better way of putting it is it's something that you had never had to question. You'd just taken it for granted.
Yeah, that's a good way of summing it up.
What about you, Molly?
To be honest, I've never really particularly felt I've been from one place at all. And I think it's the moving around is that your family is kind of where your home is and you don't really have a label. But I would say now it's kind of being European has like just embraced it. Being European, I've embraced it a lot more than before. Because before I just always thought, well, freedom, one thing that we always used as a family was freedom of movement. And so even though we had these rights, we didn't realise what it really meant to be a European. We just thought, oh, it just happens. That kind of feeling. And I feel like when somebody's put you under threat, you start to hold on to that identity even more.
Yeah, it kind of brings it, it makes it more solid in some ways, I suppose.
I think also at 24 and 25, we've never known anything else. For me, I was born 5 years after the Berlin Wall came down. I've never known a world without a European Union as a political institution. It was weird, the idea that the UK might not be part of something like that. And I know with history and politics, it all changes. And you've got countries that get renamed and all this sort of stuff. But it just sort of, it didn't feel real. Because it's just like, it always seems to, it happens in the history books, or you don't expect to be living it yourself.
So living Brexit is basically the experience that you're referring to here. But before Brexit, if we could just backtrack a little bit, we talked about a little bit about how you thought or didn't think about being European, or rather you just lived it. And this has brought to the fore the need for you to think about what that actually is. But how involved were you or interested in politics?
So before Brexit and before moving to the UK, I could only vote in local elections in Germany. And I didn't tend to do that because, not that I didn't think that my voice was important, it just...
Local politics is a particular type of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was for a mayor, or like, it wasn't for the way that a country was politically developing itself. And so I wasn't that active. And I think Brexit and the fact that I moved to the UK and then regained my ability to vote made me politically active. Because up until the point where I moved to the UK, I'd never been able to vote in... I was 19, so I'd only had a year of the possibility to vote. I had never voted in a national level election.
Yeah. Did you have the right to vote in European elections?
I did, and I didn't vote when I had a chance. And then this year, with what happened with Brexit and everything like that, motivated me to go and vote in the European election, because I didn't get to vote in the Brexit referendum because of issues with postal votes. And my parents didn't get to vote because they've been out of the UK for more than 15 years. And my sister was still at school at that time, so didn't get a vote either. And actually being denied your vote on such a big issue was like, I'm not ever going to waste the chance to vote in something that I can vote in. And so that made me more politically inclined.
Or more inclined to use your vote.
Yeah.
So,
I think people forget how important the right to vote is, especially as a woman, how people have really fought for us to have that right. For me, like, I had the same issue with the Brexit referendum with pretty much most of anything like public votes, everything like that. I left the UK when I was 18 to come to Germany. And because of the registration issues, I couldn't vote permanently for years. I had a registration kind of problem. And so it's like the ability, like, as you were saying, Naomi, that you can't vote on something that matters to you. It's a real problem. It's horrendous because you're like, so I don't really have a say. Politically, like, I didn't really, honestly, my politics knowledge was zero before we started campaigning. It's because it's never affected me. I was always, I was always caring about humanitarian issues. I was a very sensitive child. So I was always crying if I saw an advert of, like, starvation in Africa or anything like that. That always affected me. Or injustice. I hated injustice. But politics, no. I just thought it's that thing, you know, somewhere over there. I hear it in the news, but that's it. I didn't even know what the EU stood for. That's how limited the knowledge was.
But with Brexit, you've learned a lot more, I assume.
Definitely a lot more. Probably, maybe even too much. Maybe it's like, well, the more you learn, the more frightened you get.
Why do you think it was important to you to... So you've both kind of said that it's really terrible that on something that affects your life so much, you didn't have a say. I mean, it probably seems like a self-evident question, but what were you concerned about in terms of what Brexit would mean for you?
It was not defined whether I was going to be able to have dual citizenship. It was how quickly was it going to impact my ability to live where I'm currently living. Anything in politics takes time. So it wasn't going to be like from day one, you're out, you need to move. It was more like, what is the impact on me going to be? Because I don't know. And many people are still in this sort of in limbo of the fact they don't know what's going to happen next. You can't predict. And it's your sort of your life gets put on pause almost because you're like, do I go and buy a house? What is the impact if I go and buy a house? Or what's the impact if I go and sign a contract for 12 months or 13, 24 months for renting a place? What is that impact on me? Or can I make those decisions that I want to go and do X, Y, and Z? And for me, I did a 4-year degree. Had I stayed in the UK any longer, so another year, the fact that I had lived in Germany for 19 years before that would have basically eradicated my ability to get dual citizenship. So, because there was a time limit on it.
And in terms of how long you could be outside of Germany before you could apply for citizenship?
You basically get given 5 years. So you have to have lived in Germany 8 years to get dual citizenship. And if you leave the country, you have those however many years that you've...
So is it about habitual residence?
Collected almost. Yeah. Are then eradicated almost, so they don't count anymore. So you're then back to square one and have to build up the time again.
Those were the questions that were going through your head.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't apply for grad schemes because of that, because I was like, well, I need to do this is much more important for me long term. And so even the career choices I made or the life choices I made were defined by Brexit. It had an impact.
So it started to influence your ideas about your future and started to change the actions that you may have taken. So it became integral to the decisions that you made.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you, Molly?
I would say it's a very similar situation. I guess, I mean, freedom of movement was the one, like all of us, that I was petrified of losing because we've always exercised it. And so my idea of the future was I would work in the EU for the foreseeable 5 years, and I normally move countries every year or every 6 months. I normally have a different job. That was how it used to work. So I was used to crossing borders continuously, and so that worried me because eventually my plan was to go back to Australia on sponsorship after I'd got on my experience working in Europe, and also about I wanted to study again as well. I want to study human rights law soon, and my fear is, do I pay non-EEA fees, which will be at least 7,000 euros more in the Netherlands or in Germany, and I can't afford that. And the other thing is my dad's job as well, our main source of income, is that he travels and works in different countries about 2-3 times a month. So what would happen if we need a visa, because we haven't lived anywhere long enough to have citizenship? You know, the job market is very limited if you don't have EU citizenship. When you apply for a job, the first thing they'll ask you is, do you have EU citizenship? If you don't have it, they're pretty much going to reject you immediately. No matter how much experience you have. I know this because American friends I've had who come here, Australian friends have said it's very hard to get a job. And I think also for my parents, I worry about their retirement, about healthcare. Also, I need a lot of time with... I have mental health conditions and dyslexia, so I need mental health care. And so it's just certain things, you know, it's just that make it very difficult. Like you said, it made you reassess your life a lot.
So it's kind of, it starts to make you realise all of the things that have been supporting the life that you've had so far as well, and how they've been brought together through EU citizenship and freedom of movement. I mean, one of the things that you're doing with Young European Voices is trying to get these kind of young voices heard about Brexit. Why do you think, first of all, I suppose, do you think that there's an absence of young voices being heard about Brexit?
I would say yes, there is. And I think there's also an absence of young people standing up and having their voices be heard. And I don't know what the reason for that is. In Young European Voices, we've also had various discussions as to what, because trying to reach out to people and young people to get them involved and say, look, this directly affects your future. We're in the generation that's sort of growing up now, that's in sort of infancy, are going to have to live through this the longest. We need to equally give our two cents on the issues that sort of we feel directly affect us. But yeah, I do think there's just not enough young people's voices being heard. And I think there's also a generational divide on Brexit as well. And the fact that this whole derogatory terms about young people and politics, can't have discussions on political issues because they're snowflakes and they're just going to cry. And this, I don't think, helps the situation. But I then also think that people are discussing political issues in sort of silos. The fact that younger people are using various other forms of social media to discuss political issues. But then, because I study politics, it seemed like too many young people discussing the issues. So you're in a bubble where people are sort of over-analysing this political debate.
I would probably say the same. I mean, it's very, very similar, basically what Naomi said. And then it's just, I also trying to motivate my friendship group. I mean, I have the opposite issue, where they're completely disinterested. And so it's like, this is what's going to affect you. I mean, I'll be honest, my friends in the UK are disinterested. I probably have the most support from third country nationals in the group as well, because they're worried, they're seeing us and they're going, if they can do that to you, what can they do to us? Kind of right in the far right. And then I've also had a lot of support my friends who are from ex-communist nations, who are saying, like, you know, we were protesting as kids to maintain our rights as EU citizens.
I mean, what particular challenges have you faced in terms of getting your voices heard? Because, of course, you're part of this campaign group, so which works with, I should stress again, that it's not just about young UK citizens who live in the EU. You're also paired with EU nationals who live in the UK, because you see this... Yeah. As a problem that afflicts you all, Brexit. So what challenges have you faced in getting your voices out there?
I think there's a misunderstanding in politics at the moment, I think, about this nature of, like, the disenfranchisement of both our groups. I think a lot of us feel that we've been brushed aside and we aren't important because we're sort of beyond the remit of the UK because we're living abroad, and the same with EU citizens in the UK. And I think sometimes the issues that are expressed aren't always taken so seriously.
It's actually made us like a family, it really has. It's brought us together when what the government wanted to do was separate us. But I feel like we're slightly lucky, well, for me anyway, we don't have to put up with xenophobic attacks all the time. which is, as I know, is what a lot of being astronaut EU citizens in the UK are suffering with. So I've actually had the opposite. I've had people hugging me and saying, don't go. You know, we were in the Netherlands on the day of the referendum and this random guy came up to us in the petrol station, was saying, whatever you do, don't leave us, and was crying.
I think that's really, it's a really important political point about working together in a time when the political tendency is to divide and to separate those out. So I think that's really, really important. And I like that idea of you basically, you seem to have collected around that idea of being European. And that's the thing that you share with the EU nationals in the UK, even though, of course, what happens to you will be different because of the different political and political systems in the different countries. But I think that's a really good kind of reminder of something that people of your generation, of your age, who, as you said, have never known anything else other than being European citizens. There is, of course, another side to Brexit, which is the EU. And I know that you've talked a lot about getting your voices heard in Britain, really, in terms of the fact that quite a lot of young people like you who've been raised in other European countries, it's not that they were disenfranchised. They never had the franchise in the first place because they had never been on the electoral register. So it's kind of by accident of the fact that you both spent a bit of time in the UK that you were even allowed to be on the electoral register. So there's all of those young people who would never, just wouldn't have any rights to vote in the UK despite being UK citizens. But are you trying to make your voices heard in Europe as well? Because, of course, they are the other side of the table.
Yeah, we've been doing media interviews with Naomi's done quite a few in Germany. Yeah. And then also Andrea's done some. We've, you know, Ellie has done some as well. We've all kind of, like, taken turns in doing it. So I don't think also in Brexpats and everything, everybody's trying to get both sides of the coin.
Because it is important. And actually, I think the European Union and the 27 other member states have been much more proactive in actually lobbying for us as well and for EU citizens in the UK in comparison to the UK. So I would say we've had a lot more positive discussions on that front with various people.
And I would say as well, like, the EU, what people, you know, the EU is not perfect. We all know that. Nothing's perfect. But even, like, I disagree on some things as well, like the refugee policy that I'm not really a big fan of. But, you know, but at the end of the day, isn't it, like I said to my friends and my family, isn't it better to be unified? And if you want to change anything, make it in that unification, you know, change it within the European Union. But do we really want to go back to fascism? And do we really want to go back to World War II, where we had all these divided nations? And I think Brexit is almost like a chain reaction. That if it happens, we can already see the far right rising in Italy, in France, Germany, you know, and you could in the Netherlands. So we really need to stop it, because that reaction will only spill over into other countries.
I would also argue sort of Brexit and the whole sort of political crisis that we've got at the moment is also connected to climate change. And will only get worse because of that. Because I think everyone at the moment is, or so many people are fighting for their little piece of the pie. So we want jobs, or we want to make sure we've got this, this, and this for ourselves. And actually, we should be pulling together and helping each other out. And I think it's sort of all the issues that we've got at the moment, they're all so interconnected.
So you can't just look at one without looking at the others as well. Well, thank you both very much. It was lovely, lovely talking to you.
You've been listening to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast, hosted by me, Dr. Michaela Benson, and produced by Emma Halton at Art of Podcast. The series is part of a UK and a Changing Europe funded research project, Brexit Brits Abroad, that's all about what Brexit means for UK citizens living in the EU 27. We're really keen to hear from you about the issues and concerns we address in the programme, so please do get in touch with any thoughts, queries and questions. You can find our contact details on our webpage, Brexit Brits Abroad, or get in touch via social media. We're on Twitter at BrexpatsEU, and we have a Facebook page, Brexit Brits Abroad. Finally, in case you're not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so on both iTunes and Google Podcasts. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with the next episode.